Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
All right, good morning to you. Welcome into the Mark Cox Morning Show. A little bit of snow falling out there, causing a few problems. And my daughter's driving down I-70. She says there's certainly some slush and people going slow and cautious. So if you're driving downtown, just take it easy. Once again, a number of schools have called off for today because they just don't want to risk it. Let's face it, some of the side streets probably still weren't clear enough for 17-year-olds to be driving anyway. Plus, you got to drive buses out and about. So I know that Rockwood and a number of other school districts have already called off. Here's the thing these days. You probably don't have to come to the radio station or the online website to figure out what's closed because you all get texts and phone calls to your personal cell phones in the morning. Boy, how far we've come since the covered wagon days, huh, Kim?
I know. Can you believe that? That you experienced that to where we're at now?
Carl and I were talking about what we had to do in high school, right?
Walked uphill both ways in the snow.
We did, and had to listen to our local radio station or TV station and wait for the crawl across the bottom of the screen alphabetically to finally get to our school district to figure out whether or not we were closed or not.
They invented TVs back then?
Oh, boy.
Now, don't act like you're that old, because I, too, had to watch the bottom of the screen.
No, but that was...
And I'm in my 30s.
Yeah, but, I mean, generally speaking, I would get on, because I grew up in Cincinnati, I'd get on and I'd turn on a 700 WLW out of Cincinnati, and then they would have to read... Think of the nightmare that used to be for morning radio. They would have to read the entire list of school closings. There was no other way to do it, right? Because you didn't have websites back then, and they didn't want you turning on the TV, so they'd just say, we're going to read you the school closings in 6 minutes, and then you'd lay there in bed praying that your district was on there, right? But my school district was the Lemon Monroe High School, and it took forever to get the L's because they were coming out of Cincinnati, and they were 25 miles away, so they had a lot of schools in their area, and it would take them forever to get through the alphabet to ours.
And I went to CBC in the 80s, and we never got off, ever.
They were tough.
Yes.
Those cadets.
Because we used to make fun of the Vianney kids, because they got off all the time. Like, if it was like this,
yeah,
off.
Well, some of it depends, though, on not maybe a private school, but some of it depends on where the kids are located, because some of these schools have a lot of kids
districts.
In the suburban, but then you have rural kids, and the buses just can't get out there. But now it's funny, Mark, you know, you had your daughter's school call off, and it was like a recording, but it was kind of fun.
Yeah.
And yeah, I've heard principals or superintendents, I guess I should say, who
Glenn
have done jingles, and they've you know, turn the lyrics from a popular pop song that the kids would know into lyrics talking about how that they have the day off. And so things are very different now when they're announcing that school's closed.
More snow to the south this time than to the north. So I'm sure a lot of the more rural districts, Farmington, that area, Bonterre, probably closing down. This front is moving all the way across the country through Nashville. They got snow in Atlanta this morning. They got all kinds of problems. All right. Coming up this hour, we're going to talk to Gerard Felitti at the bottom of the hour about he's with the Lawfare Project. He's senior counsel over there. We're going to talk about this Supreme Court decision and what the hell Amy Coney Barrett was thinking, siding with the liberals in this case. I don't get it, but I'm now worried that we got another Chief Justice problem on our hands here with Amy Coney Barrett on the court. We will talk about that at 8:35. I'm sorry. And also, we're going to talk about a fundraiser that's coming up, believe it or not, for Backstoppers. January 18th, if you love soccer, we got a great deal for you to come up to bring the family out and support local law enforcement and Backstoppers. And that is going to happen on the 18th. So we'll talk to them at about 8:45 about all of that. We'll get an update from Sue Thomas as well. Carl, let's get to our top stories right now, please.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
No, I haven't, but it will come soon, and it's going to be somebody that's going to help President Trump deliver on the mandate he earned from the American people.
Ron DeSantis says he's not made a final decision, but he's going to soon announce his pick for the Senate replacement for Marco Rubio out of the state of Florida.
There's water coming out there. You can use it.
I appreciate it. I'm going to make the call to address everything I can right now.
People I'd like safe. To make sure you do. Can I have an opportunity to at least tell people you're doing what you're saying you're doing?
Yeah. That was a citizen in California confronting Gavin Newsom, who claimed to be on the phone begging for federal assistance. She said, I don't care about that. I want to know why there's no water coming out of that fire hydrant behind you.
The governor has not done a good job. With that being said, I got along well with him when he was governor. We worked together very well.
Yeah, Donald Trump's not cutting him any slack either. Obviously, talking about Gavin Newsom there. You can be critical of a response like that without necessarily politicizing it.
This is my longest ever interview of a president.
Yeah, well, the longest ever before this was one question, and it would rush you out of the room, right?
Yeah, this is true. President Trump, everything's going to change when he gets back in the office. There was some talk this morning about is it controversial that he might change the way the media press briefings are, the press briefing room? I don't know. I wouldn't think so.
What would be controversial about that?
I don't know. Have you been to it?
No.
Okay, I've been there a couple times. I've been fortunate enough to be in there. Small, right? There's not much they can do to expand it. It covers an area near the West Wing that apparently at some point was a swimming pool or something. And it's just a narrow room. Like, you can't fit any more seats into it if you wanted to. There's positions for live cameras in the back. And then there are offices, small little offices further back for the media to file their reports on. I don't know what he could do to change it, to be honest with you. It'll be interesting to see how that whole thing goes down. But talking about that issue, the fires in California, pointing fingers of blame at what happened there, right? Somebody has to be held accountable. It's fire season. Why would the reservoirs not? Well, you know, they got the fire official on there today who's in charge of water for the entire region. This woman makes $700,000 a year in the city of L.A., makes $300,000 more than the president of the United States, and can't explain why the reservoirs ran out of water. It was just too much demand. In the middle of fire season, listen to this.
So many of us have these darker chapters in our life, and it's all what we do with it, and it's all how we persevere and choose not to quit in that process.
Cleaning. What happened in Palisades? We have three large water tanks, about 1 million gallons each. We ran out of water in the first tank at about 4:45 p.m. yesterday. We ran out of water on the second tank about 8:30 p.m. and the third tank about 3 a.m. this morning. Those tanks help with the pressure on the fire hydrants and the hills of Palisades. And because we were pushing so much water in our trunk line, And so much water was being used before it can get to the tanks. We were not able to fill the tanks fast enough. So
I've seen a number of celebrities posting on social media frustrated, saying, do you have any idea in California how much money we pay in taxes? You know, obviously there's a big call, and understandably, for people to donate, right, to Salvation, whatever, yeah, these different call, yeah, Red Cross. But people were saying, we pay so much money in taxes in California, they should have more than enough to do anything that they need. They shouldn't have to cut $17.6 million from the fire department.
Because they waste it. And I don't know if those cuts directly connected. I mean, that was very recent. I don't know that it had anything to do with what happened out there. But this Janice Quinones is her name, makes $750,000 a year to run their water system out there, and wasn't prepared for the demand if a major fire broke out, which happens every year in Southern California. There is no excuse for this. She should be fired. The fire chief should be fired. The DEI chief should be fired. They're all making $400,000 a year. They make as much as the president of the United States. It's insane what's happened in these big cities where there hasn't been an outside political voice in 30 years. It's sad is what it is. It's really sad. All right, coming up, some of it isn't sad. Carl and Matthew, maybe if you grew up here, you remember wrestling at the Chase. That's going to be a focus of Sue's show this weekend. She's going to give us a few more details on that when we come back in just a couple minutes.
You know, I specifically remember when I was in high school, a group of us, we had one buddy who was into wrestling, and the rest of us were pretty critical of him for it. We used to make fun of him a lot. So one day we agreed to go down to a wrestling match, and we almost ended up getting into a fist fight with some of these wrestling fans, because while our buddy was really into it, we were making fun of how fake it all looked, and some of these people really got mad at us. But I grew up in Cincinnati, so a different place, different time. We got Sue on the phone with us right now, and coming up this weekend on History of the Lou with Sue, we're talking about wrestling at the Chase. How are you?
I'm fine, Mark. I'll tell you what, people love this. This is such a huge part of St. Louis history. And it ran, Wrestling at the Chase, well, its first incarnation started in 1953. And think about it. Okay, then television comes along in the 50s. Yeah. And it ran, by the way, through 1983. Television comes along. There are three major stations in St. Louis. That's fine. But right around the late 50s, Mr. Koppler thought to himself, I'm going to get myself a local station that's not affiliated with ABC, yep, NBC, CBS. But there's no real programming because it's the 50s.
Yeah.
So he's on a flight and runs into Sam Muchnick, who is the president of the St. Louis Wrestling Club. And he's kind of taken the entire National Wrestling Alliance and shrunk it down into one thing. So there's one national champion and that sort of thing. And they get to talking, and Sam says, well, wouldn't be bad to have wrestling on TV. And Mr. Koppler says, dang, that's a good idea. And Wrestling at the Chase was born.
Channel 11, right?
On Channel 11. Mm-hmm. And anybody from that era, Carl, do you remember it?
It was on Sunday mornings after church.
That's right.
We went to Mass and then came back and watched Wrestling at the Chase.
I didn't realize, didn't appreciate, because obviously I moved here in the 90s, so early 90s. I didn't appreciate that. Obviously, I knew it was going on. But there were some big names, people that went on like the McMahons, right, who went on to eventually buy them out here locally and go national with it.
Yeah, they did, but you're getting past it.
Oh, okay.
So we've got to get right into the 50s to the 80s when people would, and at one point, Mark, they did it at first in the fancy ballroom at the Chase Park Plaza.
That surprises me the most, that this was happening,
right,
at the Chase.
The Coruscant Ballroom.
Wow. The Coruscant Ballroom, and there were women and men there in these super fancy outfits sitting ringside watching this stuff.
Sweaty wrestlers.
Exactly. And then television comes into color. And at that point, all the equipment back then was really temperamental and heavy. So the Channel 11 people said, you know what, we can't be dragging this equipment over here to this ballroom all the time. They created a studio, and since Channel 11 is kind of attached to the Chase,
yeah,
it wasn't that big of a deal. They turned it into a studio, and then the fancy people weren't there as much. People would line up, about 1,000 people, for the recordings of these things. And they would take about 300, and they would do three wrestling matches and record them. And after a match, they'd have everybody get up and change seats so it would look different. So it really was a thing, and it went on until 1983. So all of the names here. And then I'm interviewing Fred Bottomer about this. People were so into it. When Fred was a kid, he actually would watch all of the shows, write down everything that happened, created a newsletter, and sold it. So he had like international people that he would handwrite newsletters until he started typing. This is how it was. And Ed Wheatley is in. He's written a book about wrestling at the Chase, and there's a documentary out. But we'll talk about all the old wrestlers and how it went. Andre the Giant came into town. He didn't wrestle at the Chase, but he was out at Kiel. And there's a story about people, you know, the wrestlers would walk from the hotel to the Chase or to the wherever they were going. And sometimes people would be obnoxious. Oh, I can take you, blah, blah, blah. And then at the bar at the hotel where they were staying, the Andre the Giant came down one day, and he said, are people in here? Is somebody saying there's going to be a fight? As soon as Andre walked down, that was the end of it. They all ran out of the room.
I'll bet.
The Rock's dad wrestled at the Chase, and so The Rock Johnson was here as a kid.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so all of this we're going to cover this weekend.
Well, you should remind people when they can listen to History of the Lou with Sue.
It's on 97.1, 6 a.m. and 6 p.m. on Sunday, or Camel X on Saturday at 1, or Camel X Sunday at 4.
Awesome. And Joe Garagiola, I'm about out of time, but wasn't he one of the early broadcasters for it?
He was the very first one, and he kind of legitimized the whole thing.
That's what a great story. Sue, thank you.
You're welcome.
You bet. Be sure and tune in. This is a great book, too. Great coffee table book by Ed Wheatley's got out here that I'm kind of holding up here. All right, coming up, we're going to talk more about the Supreme Court decision not to block sentencing for Donald Trump. Stay tuned.
It was stated pretty strongly a couple of weeks ago about Canada, and people laughed. And now they're all saying, well, it's very interesting. And I say from the standpoint of the United States, we're subsidizing Canada. $200 and $250 billion a year. We have massive deficits. They've taken about 20% of our car business. I'd rather do it here. We could put tariffs on that. We don't have tariffs on them yet, but they will. That will happen.
Yeah, that's part of a President-elect Trump's news conference yesterday. He was talking about Canada. He was talking about this, and he was eventually asked about, I think maybe you put it out on Truth Social, reaction to the Supreme Court deciding not to get involved in stopping sentencing today in this case in New York. And, you know, he's like, well, you know, they wanted to go through the appeals process. Then they made some comments in there about that, and I'm okay with it. I was just shocked at who all was involved in the decision. Let's get to Gerard Felitti. Nice of him to join us this morning. Political strategist with the Lawfare Project, and he's senior counsel there as well. Gerard, thanks for giving me some time today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Let's talk about what this Supreme Court decision was yesterday and what it wasn't.
Well, what the Supreme Court decision was basically saying, we're not going to get involved now, let the appeal play out, and then who knows, we might get to it at some point. But that it's a correct decision. Donald Trump still has the whole appeal process to play out in the state of New York, and then he can ask the Supreme Court to look into it again.
So obviously, a number of judges, four of them, disagreed with this decision. What was their argument as to why the court should have stepped in and either delayed or stopped this sentencing?
Well, first of all, the order itself is one paragraph with three sentences, and there's no dissent, so there's no explanation on why they would grant the application. But the usual suspects, Thomas, Alito, Gorsuch, and Kavanaugh, were the ones who would have granted the application. And I think they see this as an issue of, if you are asserting some privilege or immunity from a lawsuit, it should never get to sentencing. That needs to be resolved first. So I think they would have decided that the presidential immunity arguments needed to be heard before you got to sentencing.
Isn't it true that ultimately in our system, you're not considered convicted until sentencing? Is that correct? Even if the sentence today is a slap on the wrist, at that point, he's officially considered convicted, correct?
Correct. Up until 9:30, well, it is 9:30 now, up until whenever this hearing starts and the conviction is entered, Donald Trump has not yet become a convicted felon. So that is an important distinction. People were trying to say that he was a convicted felon, not yet. That's what happens today. And this is in part what makes it a little bit political. Judge Merchan came up with the sentencing date on his own. The DA, Alvin Bragg, was not pressing for it. No one was pushing for sentencing. Everyone seemed to be on board with just letting it linger until after Trump was exited office in 4 years. But the judge wanted to have the last word, and he wanted to make sure that the conviction was entered. That's why we have this going on today.
Yeah, we're watching the feed right now. Fox News is showing what looks like outside the courtroom. And obviously, Trump is attending virtually today. But it will be interesting what is determined to be the sentencing here, because we're not expecting jail time. But even if it's some astronomical fine that they're telling Trump he has to pay, ultimately, this could end up back at the Supreme Court, right? Because Donald Trump has already said he'll appeal and he could take it up all the way, right?
Absolutely. We don't expect there to be any fine, actually, because when we're talking about an unconditional discharge, which is what Judge Merchan was signaling, that means no jail time, no fine, no probation, no conditions. It's basically, we found you guilty and we don't care enough to impose a sentence on you. Again, it's political. But this will absolutely be appealed. It'll work its way through New York, through two different court layers in New York, if he does not prevail, and then to the U.S. Supreme Court. Ultimately, it may come back down to the immunity issue. And whether this was appropriate to even bring in the first place.
So let's say he won an appeal after the sentencing, then he would no longer be considered a convicted felon at that point. Is that right?
Essentially, yes. If the conviction is overturned, then there would be an order that basically rescinds that status. So he would be exonerated and he would not be a convicted felon.
So what are the other issues here? I mean, as a member of the Lawfare Project, Lawfare, the word Lawfare has been thrown around a lot during this entire trial, during several of them, that the argument that his political opponents are using the legal system to try to, well, to try to defeat him. They clearly lost that argument. But at the end of the day, this is the one that finally got through that could end up, if Judge Merchan wanted to, with a jail sentence.
Correct. And that is that is in a way what the risk is, because while the judge signaled his intent not to sentence Trump to prison, ultimately today he can do whatever he wants to impose a sentence. He will hear from the DA, from Alvin Bragg, on what the people of the state of New York want in terms of a sentence. Then he'll hear from Trump's lawyers on their view on a sentencing, and we know where they stand on this. And then the judge decides on a sentence. But we don't expect there to be any surprises. But at the end of the day, if Donald Trump had not been elected president, I think we could actually have been looking at incarceration, because that's the way this trial was going.
Wow. And among the allegations of bias and complaints here on the part of the judge, I mean, is that part of the appeal for Donald Trump that this guy's daughter, this judge's daughter, is a major fundraiser for a lot of Democrats around the country?
It is part of the appeal. It's not the strongest part of the appeal. It's not dissimilar to arguing that Fannie Willis should have been disqualified, as she was, for her improprieties. But at the end of the day, the strongest argument for appeal is, first, that this should never have been brought as a case in the first place. But more to the point, the decisions the judge made during the trial were incorrect. That Trump was not allowed to present the witnesses and evidence that he wanted, and as a result of that, he was wrongfully convicted. That's the strongest part of the appeal. The judge's character, I think we all know what it is, but the strong part is the legal decisions he made.
Yeah. Let's talk for just a second about the Lawfare Project. I mean, a lot of what you do and focus on is protecting Jewish people, correct?
Jewish people, yes, because they're an underserved minority. We are seeing the civil rights issues across the country right now, but it's an issue that affects all Americans when we have voices of terrorism that deny all of us our civil rights, that are burning the American flag and wanting to bring jihad and Islamic terrorism to America's shores, and deny us of our constitutional freedoms. It's something ultimately that affects all of us.
Absolutely. And the fact that what we've seen just on college campuses in America since the October 7th attack on Israel, almost 2 years ago, year and a half ago, is stunning, to say the least.
And you know what? We still have American citizens being held hostage in Gaza for now. They're longer than Americans were held by Iran after the 1979 sacking of our embassy. Joe Biden still has not had them released, and they're still not home. That's still an issue we need to look at. We need our citizens protected.
Yep, and January 20th is coming, so hopefully that situation gets resolved at some point. Gerard Felitti, thanks for your time.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Lawfareproject.org is the website. Good to get a little insight on what's going to happen, and it could be happening in a courtroom right now. I guess we don't even get to listen in on it, or maybe they will. It says the sentencing is underway, but
it's interesting he's attending virtually.
They've only been showing transcripts. They've not been showing.
But there was a feed originally. Remember those shots of him sitting in there and going in and out of that door that they're now showing on TV? But for some reason, today we're not actually hearing any audio out of that courtroom. So I'm sure if we find out what happened before the end of the show here in 15 minutes, we'll be sure and tell you about it. Great event coming up. If you're a soccer fan and you love supporting first responders and the fine folks over at Backstoppers, we're going to tell you all about it in just a minute. All right, welcome back. And I'm looking outside here, some snow falling, and the road's a little slushy in places. A lot of schools closed. And we will keep you updated on that if anything else pops up here before the end of the show, for sure. Maybe we should ask, we have the Detective Sergeant Shane Monig in studio with us from the Maryland Heights Police Department, and we're getting John Dolan on the phone, who's chairman of Backstoppers from St. Charles County. But you just drove in on this, Detective. Welcome into the show. What are the roads like?
They're not good.
Not good?
No. They're slushy. I don't think the plows can do anything yet.
You had to put those defensive driving skills to work this morning?
I did. We have four-wheel drive, so that's
good. That's good. Thank you guys for being here. I appreciate that. Thank you kindly for the gift that you brought me. This is one of my favorite bottles of bourbon here. You guys, this is part of your barrel pick this year?
It was. It was our second barrel pick, the Maryland Heights Police Officer Association. It's about a 12-year rye.
Planters Whiskey Ozark American. It's outstanding, from Nobleton's Distillery. I love that. You guys did that as a fundraiser, I know, but now you're helping out Backstoppers again and through with soccer, and I think that's really cool. So tell us a little bit about what's coming up on the 18th.
It'll be the second annual event. Last year it was four Backstoppers. This year we get to put the Guns and Hoses name on it. It's an awesome situation. We're going to hold it out at the St. Charles Family Arena. Shelly Clark, with the Ambush, approached Backstoppers last year and asked if they'd be interested in doing something. It was an awesome event, and this year we've got two teams. We got one police team, and we got a fire and EMS team, and got about 50 players, 25 on each team. They're going to be from agencies from St. Louis Metro, St. Louis County, Maryland Heights, St. Charles County, St. Charles City, Wentzville, and then we have paramedics from and firefighters from all over, mostly St. Charles County.
Well, and the one thing you're guaranteed here is if any punches get thrown, yellow cards are coming out, right?
Well, we'll see.
Stop the fight.
Could be
unless
a little rough
blood,
and tumble,
right?
Fighting's good.
I didn't grow up playing soccer, but we used to play it in high school. And the gym teacher was also the football coach. And soccer was a whole lot different back then. You could get away with a little more than you can these days, for sure.
we've had some warm up practices, and there's some bumping and grinding going on.
So. Well, that's pretty awesome. We've got John Dolan on the phone now, as chairman of the Backstoppers for the St. Charles County chapter. John, welcome back. How are you?
Wonderful, sir. Thank you so much, Mark, for all your support in this in 97.1. You guys are great.
Well, we're glad to get the word out, because I know there are so many people hungry for soccer. This is a great opportunity to showcase that, and also it's at the Family Arena, so you're inside and you're warm and you're dry and you don't have to worry about any of this weather.
That's correct. You know, and Shane said Shelley Clark reached out to us last year. Brian Wagner, he's been instrumental in putting this together. Lieutenant Jeff Swadick over at Maryland Heights, and Shane, they've done a great job doing this. Andy Fowler with St. Charles County Ambulance. You know Steve Holly, and you're a big supporter yourself of Guns and Hoses. And Steve got behind this. We're going to make it an annual event. It's going to be wonderful.
Well, I love it. And the fact that you can go out there and watch the Ambush play, right, and then stick around for all the fun. One ticket price covers it all. Am I right about that, Shane?
Correct. Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely. The game's going to be on January 18th. It's Saturday night. Our game starts at about 8. The ambush game's at 5:05. You come out, get 2-for-1. They're going to keep refreshments open through our game. There's going to be plenty of giveaways and opportunities. I know they put a bulk order in for the jerseys that both the police and the fire and EMS team will be wearing.
Oh, yeah.
And the public will have an opportunity to purchase
those. Oh, you can buy those. That's cool.
So did anybody who participate in the boxing match that I went to for the first time this year, are they participating in this soccer game?
A few of us have boxed. I have boxed at a lower event, similar, and we have a few other officers and EMS that have. I'm not sure on our current rosters, but I mean, we all participate in the Guns and Hoses event in November every year for sure.
You probably have some pretty good players too, maybe some amateurs in the mix, but also maybe some people who played soccer in high school or college. I don't know, something like
that. I'd say it's pretty high level. We have people, I mean, we go from 21 or 20 years old with some EMS. On Andy's team, and all the way up to mid-50s. But
wow.
I mean, it's high level. I mean, for what we do, I mean, we're not doing it for a living. It'll be fun.
Hey, John, I'm just thinking it's good news for those 50-year-olds that are going to try to play that they got a lot of EMS people out on the field.
That's right. They'll be standing by. This is going to be a great family event for families that have young kids. If you haven't been to the ambush game, I would say get out there. Great value for the money, plus you'll be supporting the backstoppers. We're going to have a static display out in front with the police, fire, and ambulance vehicles. We're going to have canine dogs out there. They're going to put on a little show. We've got a special event. It's a surprise that'll happen at halftime. We're going to have silent auction. It's going to be wonderful. We're really looking forward to blowing this thing up.
You know, can't say enough about it, all you guys that get involved in this and put everything you've got into it. And obviously the big payoff is Guns and Hoses every year when the checks get presented. But the fundraising goes on all year round. So any way we can help out, that's fantastic. Just remind people, if you don't mind, John, how many people maybe are being still supported by Backstopper? Seems like when I had Greg Brown in here prior to Guns and Hoses this year, they were throwing around some numbers of all the people that still get supported after all these years by Backstoppers.
Yes, sir. Right now we're supporting 95 families, and there's 87 children we're supporting with that. Part of that is that we've got an education fund for all these children. We take care. Our annual debt load is about $2.5 million a year, and obviously it raises every year. We take care. We actually have one of our original beneficiaries is an older woman. She just turned 100 years old, and she's in the nursing home, and we're still with her. So we take care of these families for life once they come on board with us.
Yeah, well, that is fantastic. Thanks for all you do. That is John Dolan, chairman of the Backstoppers out in the St. Charles County chapter there. And Detective Sergeant Shane Modig in studio with us this morning with the Maryland Heights Police Department. He had the guts to get out on the road and drive down here this morning, sir. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
Yes.
It's a little bit of a mess out there. Anyway, all the details for this are up on our website at 971talk.com. If you go to 971talk.com and then hit the events tab, you'll be able to find out all of the details for this coming up Saturday, January 18th, 5 p.m. is, I assume, when the ambush game is going to start at 5, right?
Correct.
So you want to get there a little early so you can take part in all the festivities and then hang around in the silent auctions and then the game between our first responders. It ought to be a fantastic time. I'm going to try to get out there myself. Yeah. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
John, thanks
for
all you do.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
All right. We appreciate you, Mark, and your program. You do great, great work with us. We really thank you.
You're a good friend of the show, John. Thank you for saying that. And Sergeant, thanks for coming out.
Thank you, sir.
You bet. Thanks for making it. Thanks for the gift.
Absolutely.
That's going to warm me up today. I appreciate that. That's awesome. All right, that's going to do it for us. We're still waiting on this Trump sentencing. It is still underway up in New York, and I'm sure Brian Kilmeade will have the very latest for you live coming up right after the top of the hour here. Annie Fry, Mark Reardon will be in later today to discuss whatever the fallout is, and then Sue Thomas will be back in this afternoon for your drive home on your Friday afternoon. Have a great weekend. We'll see you back here Monday morning starting at 5 a.m.
Get more at 971talk.com.